This episode is brought to you in part by the new MDiv from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. The strongest MDiv just got stronger. Southern Seminary introduced a new Master of Divinity degree in order to train, educate, and prepare students for a lifetime of faithfulness with even greater effectiveness. The benefits to students are greater personalization, increased specialization, and the opportunity to earn more credentials in an efficient amount of time. MDiv students who attend classes on Southern's campus pay for only their first 9 hours each semester and take one or two additional courses for free. That reduces the cost of the Southern Seminary MDiv by thousands of dollars. Discover how you can benefit from the new Southern MDiv that is simplified, personalized, and incentivized at sbts.edu/newmdiv. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 1514. It's a delight to have you as part of our audience. This episode is an interview that I did with Pastor Peter Sondergeld of Restoration Church in Australia. And Peter joined me before to talk about his book, Becoming You. And this episode is kind of a sequel where he shares how his church has taken the content of that book and turned it into a group care book called Restore Groups. It was really encouraging to hear how God has been using Restore Groups in their church for over a decade now to bring transformation through the body of Christ to people as they draw closer to Christ, share about the lives and the struggles that they are going through, and just see the grace and mercy of Jesus poured out through other people in their church to bring about that transformation. I was really encouraged by it. I hope you're encouraged by it. And if you're interested, you can reach out to them and find out how your church can begin incorporating Restore Groups into your church's ministry as well. Thanks again for listening. Well, Peter Sondergeld, thank you so much for rejoining us for this episode of 1514. Could you reintroduce yourself to our audience? Because we may have some new listeners who didn't hear our previous conversation.
Yeah, no worries. G'day, Curtis, and hello to all the listeners. As you can tell by my greeting, I'm from Australia. I'm the lead pastor of Restoration Church, which is about an hour and a half from the coast, about halfway down the eastern side of eastern side of Australia. My wife and I planted the church about 13 years ago, and there's been a real mixture of God's huge blessing and a whole bunch of hard moments in there as well. So it's been great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I really appreciated our conversation we had before, and I really appreciated your book, Becoming You, that we talked about on that episode. And for those listeners who haven't heard it, I'd encourage you to check out that episode, but even more, check out the book, Becoming You. Great book. We've been giving it out, having our son read it this past summer. And we're picking up with a kind of a follow-up on that conversation, a different aspect of ministry that from your church that's flowed, not just from the book, but it's somewhat connected to the book, called Restore Groups. Could you tell our audience what these groups are about and give us a little intro to Restore Groups?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Restore Groups for us they're a 9-week process where we put people who are keen to go through it into gendered groups. They work through the materials of Becoming You. They do a chapter a week. They do some reflective journaling, some scripture reading, and then we gather together. There's some teaching, some singing, worship, and an extended group time that happens. For us, every Sunday night. It's something that we've been at for quite a long time. That kind of group ministry, and it's just been bearing a lot of fruit.
No, that's wonderful. So how did that come about in the church, and what did you see in the church that made you think this would be a good fit?
Yeah, that's a good question. If we go back, I mean, we've been at Restore Groups for 10 years, really, under different brands, but we've been at this kind of group ministry for 10 years. And if you go back to the first probably 2 or 3 years of the church plant, where there was, 50 to 100 people in the room, quite small. One of the things I always felt as a church planter is it's kind of more intimidating having a small crowd than a big crowd, because you can see the whites of people's eyes, and you saw the details of their lives as well. Mm. And I've from those early days of the church, I loved the idea that the gospel and the grace of God would speak to the deepest finest details in people's lives. I was a registered counsellor at that point in time too, and I always felt like I didn't want to refer people to help outside of the church. I wanted the church to catch as much of those kind of struggles and issues that people had internally. And so probably 12 years ago, I remember hearing about redemption groups at Mars Hill Church at the time, and the kinds of things that that seemed to speak to, and it kind of lit a fuse in a sense for me, where I just went, I want there to be some structures in the local church that can speak to the really deep areas of people's lives, and map the grace of God onto those kind of details. I knew that the grace of God is transformative, but I also knew that the more detailed the application of it, the more powerfully transformative it is. And so we got to work. We did engage with the Redemption Groups ministry for a while, but that was really just the trigger point, I think, for us to be thinking long and hard and to be working, in a sense, at our craft in how to run these restore groups in the church and see, you know, really significant change happen for people.
No, that's a good encouragement. And we were emailing before and talking about it before. And some people are familiar with the redemption groups in our in biblical counseling. Others are not. And one of the things we were talking about is just how there isn't a ton of conversation out there in biblical counseling about groups. I don't want to call it group therapy, but groups that are focused around helping each other grow in particular areas. But you've obviously been doing this for over 10 years and think it's a great thing in the church. What is it about group dynamics, or how is it beneficial to include these kind of things for the church in a way that fits in with but is different than the one-on-one care that we often think about when we talk biblical counseling?
Yeah, I think one of the very simple answers to that is that it brings the one another's into play that the New Testament talks about in some really deep and significant ways. I think that's huge. I think that the power to break shame is huge in groups. I mean, that's a well-known secular group therapy benefit, which I think can just be deepened so much in the context of the church and the gospel, and brothers getting alongside one another. I mean, we have heard so many times in restore groups over the 10 years, people share things that they've never shared with anyone, and they shame has told them for sometimes like 60 years, that they're unique, that they're different, that somehow the grace of God doesn't apply to them, that part of their story doesn't get covered. And what happens in the context of the groups is people take the risk to actually share some of those details. And what happens is other group members get around them and they show them grace and they show them mercy. They incarnate, in a sense, the love and the grace of God to each other. And they kind of live out what Jesus says about, you know, love one another as I've loved you. And we all aspire to love one another as Christ has loved us. But that really comes into its own when you get down to almost the really fragile, deep areas in people's lives that they rarely talk about. And that's one of the things that we often say to people who do restore groups, is that the part of you that would bring about the most transformation and change if the grace of God got down there is actually the part of you that you least want to talk about. And when you get to talk about it in a safe, small context, then other people get to get around you and they get to say really gracious, helpful things. Now, obviously, yeah, it's a group of fallen humans, so it's not always gracious and helpful. There's sometimes where it's not gracious and helpful. You know, the majority of the time, the overwhelming majority of the time, they're gracious, helpful things where people can be really present with each other and see the grace of God go to work in those deep areas.
Yeah, that's really helpful, because I think when you started talking about shame has lied to people for years, sometimes decades, and keeping them silent. I think even in the one another care that's one-on-one in counseling, the next lie that you're tempted to believe is that, well, that person gets it and they will love me, but they're a counselor, right? Yeah. If everybody else knew, they would cut me off. They would reject me. It's kind of like your mom will always love you and your counselor will always love you. But the groups kind of like build, you know, it prevents, and obviously those are lies, and we can help people understand that Satan and shame are trying to keep you from the truth and the openness and honesty and the light that Christ can shine into that situation. But groups just make it harder for those lies to take root, because more and more people are hearing and extending grace and love and mercy. So that's great. Mm. So how, in your particular church, how do they fit into the church ecosystem?
Yeah, so we've got community groups. They're small groups where, the way that we would cash it out is our community groups are the place where people do the weekly kind of rhythms of the one another's. And probably the best metaphor to use is a metaphor of a car race or a Formula One car race. The track of the Formula One car race, the main track is all the pastoral structures of the local church. So it's small groups, it's people serving, it's attending church on Sunday, it's all those kind of regular rhythms. It's a little bit of an unfortunate kind of pun in a sense, but we see restore groups as the pits in a car race where people off the track. They get some intensive work for a period of time where it's a deep dive, and then they get back on the track. So we would say to people who are in our small groups who come into restore groups, you don't need to keep attending your community group for the next 9 weeks if you don't want to. Now, they almost always choose to do both, but we don't require that. It's more like this group can be your community for the next 9 weeks, and then we'll get you back out onto the track at the end of that. And so we've had lots of conversation about how community groups can be aware of people going into restore groups and doing the deep dive, and then how they can kind of re-enter into community groups after it, so that people in their group are aware of what the Lord's been up to, and they can continue to walk next to them kind of in the weekly rhythms.
No, that's really great. A really great way to do it. It sounds like it just fits fairly seamlessly, kind of like the pits would in a Formula One race.
Yeah.
So that's good. So when, I'm curious with the restore groups, if you have people jumping into them at different times throughout the year and things, are they focused around a specific issue or topic, or is it just anybody? Like, what's the maybe format or direction of the groups?
So, that's a good question, because we've thought about that over the 10 years, and where we've stayed over the whole of the 10 years is that we want Jesus to be the center of the group. Our big concern with constructing groups around a particular issue is that the issue itself becomes the unifying center of the group rather than Jesus. And we've actually found in the groups that you don't need people to all have the same experience to get help from Jesus. And if they have different experiences and different weaknesses and different troubles, they are actually able to speak into each other's lives really, really powerfully in a way that I haven't seen it so much in groups where people have all got the same issue. We have done it we have led groups in places where there's more similarity of issue, and it hasn't been a massive, massive problem, that unifying factor becoming the issue. We did restore groups in a drug rehab center a number of years ago. And that was really interesting. I was a little curious as to how it would go. And, you might say, oh, you have a little faith, but I thought, I wonder how the gospel's going to go in this context where, you know, it's really hardcore stuff that's gone on for these these guys that we're doing the group with. And yeah, just really pleased to say the gospel comes into its own in the really hard places. And I think you see that in the life of Jesus anyway. They were people who had similarity of issues, but again, they actually didn't have exactly the same troubles and stories as each other anyway. They all had variations kind of on a theme. And so the power of having Jesus at the center and him being the unifying center is really significant. That's all we've seen.
No, it's really great. And it sounds like that would help avoid some of the other, I think, pitfalls that have plagued issue-centric groups, in a sense, because I know some guys have taken participated in, like, and they can be run well and they can be run poorly, and there's strengths and weaknesses to both. But I've seen some sinners go into sin-focused groups and they come out worse sinners because it's a bunch of sinners sharing about their struggles. But that, yeah, that sounds really great. And it again, it's another wall between you and this lie of shame, like, well, if somebody or only people who get me, who've been through what I've been through, will understand. It kind of puts flesh to that 2 Corinthians 1 idea that I don't have to experience the same exact situation as somebody else to offer comfort, because God of all comforts gives me comfort in my particular issue, but that comfort is still applicable to others as well. So that's really encouraging. Pardon me while I interrupt this episode for a special word from one of our sponsors. Are you passionate about biblical counseling and discipleship? Don't miss IBCD's annual Summer Institute Conference, June 20th through the 22nd, featuring inspiring speakers like Dr. Charles Hodges, Dave Harvey, Tim St. John, and yours truly. The pre-conference theme is Biblical Counseling in Modern Medicine, Considering the Role of Doctors, Medications, and Marijuana. The main conference theme is Life Together, Nurturing Relationships for Eternal Purposes. The event will be in sunny California at New Life Presbyterian Church in La Mesa. Can't attend in person? Get your virtual ticket with live-streamed and downloadable sessions included. Find the link to register at ibcd.org/events. Their mid-rate pricing ends April 30th, so hurry and snag this discount and others. See you there. Obviously, the people who are kind of going into the pits, getting out of the routine community life, they're dealing with fragile issues, difficult circumstances, something that's saying, I need to step aside from the normal routines of life and focus on this. How do you make sure, how do you look after those people that are going through them? What does that look like in the care process and just walking along, making sure they're doing all right?
Yeah, that's a really, really important question. I think the deeper you go in people's lives, the more fragile it gets. And it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. It's just the way that it is. That's why we don't talk about the fragile areas very much. That's why we don't get it out. I think a good rule of thumb that guides the way that we think about this is that the deeper you go in people's lives, the smaller the group needs to be and the more careful you need to be. And when I say careful, I wanted to use the word control, but that's got some negative connotations for a lot of people. But you just need to, you know, a bit like kind of air conditioning, it needs to be a bit more climate controlled so that people are in a place that they're being well cared for. What that looks like for us is, pardon me, is having a group member agreement that everyone who enters the group signs off on. We are super, super clear in all of our communication of people when they're going into groups. So we've got informed consent for people going in so that they know what it is and they know what it isn't. We're quite extensive in our communication about what the groups actually are. It's ironic in a sense. The response that we hear from people, because we put so much effort into being clear about what they're entering, and then they get in there and they go, we've never been to a group like this. This was totally different to what we thought it would be. And we're like, well, we told you what it was going to be, but it just highlights in some ways to us the uniqueness of groups like this in the church, that people people aren't accustomed to being deeply personal, like they are in restore groups. And that just highlights the need to set up some kind of parameters and some guardrails to actually run the groups. The other side of it, from an organizational point of view for us, is we just care a lot about training leaders in restore groups. We don't think that they need to be registered trained counselors or even have done any biblical counseling training, although that's an added advantage. But we provide training for them. We walk alongside them. We provide supervision in the groups. I normally do supervision of groups every fortnight. We've set up licensing of churches, the training and licensing of churches, and that's not a money-making venture for us. It's just an acknowledgement of the fact that people are going to be trafficking in some fragile parts of people's lives, and we don't want people hurt. Mm-hmm. So we offer training to churches and licensing and ongoing oversight, not in a controlling kind of way, but just helping things to be healthy so that people can go into the groups and be well cared for and see Jesus and his grace kind of mapped on to the deep, fragile parts of their life.
That's sounds like you've got quite a lot of thought, quite a lot of structure going in there. You mentioned the leaders and the training that you have for them. So who do you pick to be leaders? How does that process work?
Look, who we pick for leaders comes out of the role that we see leaders playing in the groups themselves. One of the things that I talk about regularly with my pastoral staff is when they're thinking about a leader of a particular area of the church, what do they envisage? What kind of leadership role is that? Can you find some comparative role in society that captures the way that you want them to be operating in that particular role? And so an example might be a coach of a team. Is it a coach kind of role or is it another kind of role? And so we thought long and hard about the kind of leader we could see, we wanted to see in a restore group context, and just went, we've got to clarify exactly what the nature of this leader is so that it can inform the people that we choose and how we train them, and there's all those kind of downstream effects. So we ended up landing on the category of shepherding friend. And that really captures the kind of thing that we want leaders in restore groups to be doing, to be a shepherding friend. And so if you think about friendship, there's always a time in a deep, genuine friendship where one of the friends will shepherd the other one. And our kind of main image that we think of is actually the four men that took the paralytic to Jesus. Mm. You know, they weren't trying to be Jesus. They just knew they had to get their friend to Jesus. They had this expertise that their friend didn't have. They could walk and they could carry him. And so they exercise their expertise in a sense to shepherd their friend to get him to Jesus. And so that's the way that we think about restore group leadership. We think about people who are able to walk alongside other people as a friend, but we understand that in the context of a normal friendship, shepherding happens on and off, and it's reciprocal. We understand in a restore group that's the main thing that's happening in a restore group is we're wanting people to be friends, to walk alongside the participants and to shepherd them in a really unique way for that portion of time. So that's kind of how we think about it. And once you've got that clear, then you look in your church and you go, who are the people in the church that are good friends? Who are the people in the church that are good at walking alongside others and shepherding others just naturally in the way that they do things? And when you see it, you go, we could train that person and we could get them to a place where they're really helpful in serving others in restore groups. And that's probably where you see the evidence of that shepherding friend kind of ability most strongly, is when someone's gone through a restore group, you see how they respond to the other group members and you go, oh, we could train that person. They could be a really handy friend to others as they walk this journey.
That's really great. So with maybe the big central question that we've kind of been skirting around, but what is the content of these restore groups? Is there a curriculum that you're using as you walk with these people for 9 weeks?
Yeah, we just use the Becoming You book as the main curriculum or content. It's worth saying though that the Becoming You content is probably about half of what happens in a restore group. There's a whole process that we walk people through in restore groups with other activities that they'll do along the way that help them to engage with what the Lord's doing in them. And the only other piece, and it's quite a significant piece, is the style of ministry that happens in restore groups. So it's not, you know, sometimes people have said to me, can we just sit down as a group and read Becoming You together and talk about the reflection questions at the end of each chapter? And the answer is obviously, yes, you can do that. But when you're, and that would be really helpful, but when you're thinking about restore groups, the style of ministry and the process that people go through is a really unique part of the whole deal, in addition to the curriculum of the book.
Mm, yeah. So I'm curious, when people go through restore groups and then go back to their community group, does it tend to deepen the conversations that take place in the community groups generally?
Yes, it does. Over the 10 years that we've been running them, we've been encouraging community group leaders to go through it. We noticed a really, really significant change in the way that people in the church would talk to one another when about 30% of the church had gone through restore groups. It just shifted the whole culture in the place. And it's by and large, it's retained that. We've had a lot of growth recently, but one of the pieces of feedback that we get from new people in the church quite frequently is that people in the church at Restoration Church just talk about the mess in their lives honestly, and quite openly, and not in an unhelpful way. They're just being transparent and honest, and they're wise about what they share. But you know, the word that gets thrown around by people who are new to our church is the church is authentic, which I think is true, but authenticity is kind of been wrecked a little bit as a word in my view. So I think the word that we would use is people are honest. And I think a lot of that, I mean, that's one of the core values of restore groups, is we're just going to be honest. We're not going to pretend like we're fine when we're not. We don't have to go to the deepest level and share the deepest, darkest things if we don't want to. No one's going to force you to do that. You don't have to do that, but we'll be honest about it, that we don't have stuff together. Philippians 1 verse 6 says, he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion on the day of Jesus Christ. So until that point in time, we don't have things together, and we can be okay with that. Because Jesus loves us, and he's the king, and he's got everything in hand.
Yeah. Well, it is honest with what God says about us, as you just hit on there. We are not going to be perfect until then. Mm. So if everybody in the church is dealing with imperfection, dealing with sin, dealing with suffering, dealing with these things, why do we sometimes have cultures that pretend like we don't, you know? Or at least, yeah. or maybe they don't pretend we don't, but they just turn their back on and don't discuss those things. So that's great.
I think that's what it is. In my experience in the church, there's no such thing as a messy church and a clean church, just a church that talks about the mess and one that doesn't.
Yeah.
Those are the two differences.
So is there anybody who you would discourage from attending a restore group?
Yeah, we do often encourage people to delay undertaking a restore group. I mean, that restore group's for anyone, from people with high-end issues right through to garden variety sins and sufferings, if there's such a thing. So we encourage anyone and everyone to do it. I mean, if everyone in the church wanted to go through it, that'd be great. But there's sometimes where people are in situations where we would just encourage them to delay going through it. So we had a man a number of years ago, for example, whose I think it was either his mother or father had passed away two or three weeks before he was due to start. And we just sat down with him and just said, look, when you're in the sharp end of grief of losing one of your parents, it's probably not ideal. Now, he actually said to us, no, I really want to do this. I really want to go through it. And, he really pushed in and said, I really want to go through it in spite of that. And we said, look, if you really want to, well, you know, you can do it. And he went through it and it was okay. It wasn't terrible. It didn't create any problems, but there was so much going on for him in that moment because of the grief that he was in the middle of, he probably would have been better to wait. And we tried to steer him that way, but wanted to honor his desire to go through it. There's other times where there's people who have got quite acute, I'm not sure what BCC does with this term, but quite acute mental health struggles at the time. And we don't, you know, we're not a therapy group for high-end anxiety disorders. Or now that's not to say that the groups won't speak to those things and people won't get a whole lot of healing in those places, because we've had people go through the groups who have got those issues and they've been really, really helpful for them. But when someone's they've got more of an intense experience of that going on, we would probably just say, oh, look, that it probably just, you know, we need to provide some individual help to you, or maybe you need to be seeing a counsellor to be helping you with that, to just stabilise you a little bit before you actually dive into that context. So, those, again, like I said, those people do get a lot of help from the groups, but when they're in the acute kind of side of the struggle that they're having, it's not, we kind of encourage them to just delay going through the groups.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So would you mind sharing some stories, if you can, of just what God's been doing through restore groups in people's lives?
I'd love to. I think, as I mentioned earlier, that one of the frequent things that we hear is people saying, they preface what they say with, I'm going to tell you something that I've never told anyone. Mm. And whenever you hear that, it brings such a joy to my heart. And it's almost like you're on holy ground at that point in time. Mm. You just want to slow down. You want to listen, because the next thing that the person says is going to be huge. And such an honor to listen to. I remember this group that we had a number of years ago, where there was a real mixture of ages in the group, and one of the men in the group was 70, and he was in a group with much, much younger men. I mean, the leaders of the group would have been half his age. And he was tracking okay in the group. And at the start of it, I was like, oh, how's this going to go? Here's this 70-year-old man, with all these young guys in there, and he was tracking okay. And we got talking about shame in the shame chapter. And at the end of the shame chapter, he almost said something, and everyone knew that he almost said something, but then he kind of pulled back just before he said it. And we talked about it as leaders after that session and just went, oh, we probably could have pushed him to say it. But that's not what we do in restore groups. We don't push people to say things. We invite people into something. And so that's what we said to him at the end. We said, look, you don't need to say anything. You don't need to say it if you don't want to say it. And so we didn't. Now, the next session that we had, he came in and he kind of took the floor at the start of the next session. And he said, I want to tell you what I didn't tell you last time. And so then he went on and he said that same line again, where he said, you know, I haven't said this to anyone. And he went right back to two shameful things that he did as a kid. And one of them was when he was 6 years old, and the other one was when he was 10.
Wow.
And he'd never told anyone about these things. So you're talking about, you know, 60 plus years, mm-hmm. this man sat on these things, hasn't told anyone, and has just carried the shame of his sin that he committed when he was 6 and 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And he went into the details and he shared it all with us, and we all got around him and ministered the grace of God to him in the midst of him talking about his sin and his shame. And, you know, the only word I can use to describe this man after he had done that, and it was the most beautiful yet strange thing, was giddy.
Hmm.
he just became giddy.
Wow.
Like a giddy 12-year-old boy, he just started laughing. And you could just see the joy all over the guy's face, because he'd cracked open this very, very dark space, and some brothers got in there with him, and the grace of God and the person of Christ got in there too. And it was like a flood of healing rushed toward the man, and this heavy weight that he'd been carrying for years and years and years was just gone now, and he was light, and he was free. And that's, I mean, we've heard that so many times of people sharing those things and the grace of God getting in there, people being restored. You know, the common thing that people say is they've learned how to walk with Jesus in a way that they've never kind of known before, and they live their life with an ongoing sense of his presence. They talk to him regularly about the troubles and the hard things and the sins, and their prayer life kind of goes through the roof. That was one person said to me after the group, they said, I pray all the time now, you know, and it's not a discipline, so to speak. It's a relationship, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah, well, praise the Lord. He sets captives free from all kinds of things. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, we're going to go a little bit longer than normal, but there's one other thing I want to ask you. Just how can churches, you said you license churches, basically, I'm assuming, well, tell us what that means, what it looks like, and how churches can take advantage.
Yeah, the ideal way for churches to start is to come and get a taste of the ministry. And we run intensives each year that people can get a taste of. But we've just changed our licensing and training process now, where it's roughly a two-day training process. And there's a licensing process that's attached to that. The idea from our point of view is that a church would gather 5 men and 5 women who they think could be suitable leaders based on an understanding of what the ministry is. And then I would go and do 2 days of training with them. Part of that training would be teaching, you know, the values, the model of change, the way leadership works in restore groups. It's a bit of a hybrid model, really. There's that, and then there's group times where we actually work through some of the chapters, the reflection questions at the end of the chapters, and I get to see how people respond, how they get alongside one another. And then by the end of the 2 days, I've got some people out of that group of 10 who I think could be potential leaders, and I kind of take them for a test drive and running a couple of those sessions on the second day. Because the goal from our point of view is just to find 2 men and 2 women who would be suitable leaders to get the ministry kicked off. And once the church has done the training, once the licensing side of it is sorted out, we ask for an initial 2-year commitment. And the 2-year commitment is really just an opportunity for us to walk alongside the church to make sure it's healthy. We'll provide supervision. We'll provide support. We'll do everything that we can remotely to help the ministry to run to run really, really well. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Oh, that's really great. Well, if people want to connect with you or find out more about that, where should they go? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, the easiest way internationally is just go to our website. If people go to restorationchurch.com.au, you'll find the Restore Groups page on our website. The quickest way to it is just go to restorationchurch.com.au/restoregroups. Or you can just email hello@restorationchurch.com.au. We'd love to help you out. We'd love to chat with you about it.
Oh, great. Well, hopefully you get some emails or some contacts, and I'm just envisioning myself a trip to Australia to check this out. It sounds really great to me, so hopefully it sounds really good to some other people too. So, and obviously, so thanks so much again for being with me, Peter. I always love our conversations, and we could talk for hours, but I don't think everybody else wants to listen. So thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
And special thanks to our team who helped make this podcast possible. My assistant, Rebecca Mullins, helps coordinate these interviews, and our podcast engineer, Caleb Lau, does a great job editing and putting everything together. We look forward to you joining us next time.